Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Jordan Peele's new flying saucer horror drama, Nope. It could mean that UFO fever will seize the world again. And there it was in the paper today, as I say, 75 years after the expression unidentified flying object was first coined. It's not the first UFO movie, probably won't be the last. But what is it about the sci-fi subgenre, if you like, that captivates audiences and makes it a fan favourite? Well, Alan from RT Entertainment, talk all things UFO movies. And first of all, obviously, let's start with Nope. The last two movies were so good. This is the greatest new kind of new guy in Hollywood, Jordan Peele. Everybody has to go, wow, what's this about? Is it any good? Is it just another UFO movie? Of course not.
Well, Dave, as Churchill would say, it's a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside Enigma, or as an American version of Vicky Pollard from Little Britain might say, it's kind of yep, but nope. But
so you
yep,
hadn't a clue
nope.
What was going on.
I didn't have a clue what was going on. It's a fierce pancake, Dave. I mean, there's obviously a temptation to write Jordan Peele off as a new M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah. This is the Sixth Sense director who went from high concept to low expectations very quickly. Now, Peele began his movie career with two slam dunks, Get Out and Us. So there's a temptation to look at Nope and say, hang on a second, is this the movie where he loses his golden touch, where his kind of macabre comedy of the macabre comes undone? Well, you know, I liked it a lot. I mean, I really, really did enjoy it. My problem with it is that it doesn't really quite unlock its own internal logic. It's a puzzle. And we're left to kind of solve the
you
puzzle.
You can like movies that don't seem to make sense.
Oh, absolutely! No, I know. There's so many of them out there. But I mean, that's a lot. That's for a summer blockbuster. That's good enough for me. Now, not to give too much away about the UFO itself, because that is the major reveal in the whole movie. But try to picture a man on a horse being chased around some scrubland in California by a storm of Torgerson album cover, and you're close to how this thing looks visually. The actual UFO slash monster is very visually impressive. It's a great looking movie. There's echoes of Close Encounters. There's echoes of lots of other science fiction movies as well. But it has that kind of mercurial quality that's always there in Jordan Peele's movies. It's a yap from me. I liked it, but it is a real puzzle.
Well, let's take the term UFO. Why did it seize the American public's imagination so much? It's very unfair the way I say American, but it's kind of true, isn't it?
Oh, it is very true, because I mean, yeah, the whole thing would have kind of the genesis of you know, the unidentified flying object is, of course, America, from America. The popular UFO craze, as we know it, began way back in June 24, 1947, when a civilian pilot named Kenneth Arnold reported seeing nine objects flying in a V formation near Mount Rainier in the United States. Now, he estimated the speed they were going at was 1,700 miles per hour. And he said they looked like a saucer skipping across water. So that was seized upon by, you know, clever headline writers and newspapers, and there were christened kind of flying saucers after that. Then there was the Roswell incident soon after, in which a downed observation, weather observation balloon was recovered by a farmer, and this began a whole kind of rumour mill about, actually it's a UFO, there's aliens invading and all the rest, you know. Now, this was all happening, Dave, of course, at the start of the Cold War, just when things were freezing over between Russia and the USA, the two big superpowers. Also, McCarthyism was stirring in Hollywood and in Washington. The Reds under the bed scare. The Rosenbergs were about to be executed on spying charges. So paranoia was very high in the United States at the time. So, you know, the climate and the culture was just right for this kind of post-war paranoia. Was just right for the UFO craze to really take hold of people's imaginations.
And when did we see it, like on the big screen kind of thing, in a big way, do you think?
Well, you know, naturally, you know, Hollywood came calling very, very quickly when they saw this, because the whole idea of UFOs is a very visual thing. So I suppose the very first movie that could be classified as a UFO movie was in 1950. And it's come a long way since then. I mean, a lot of the early movies are very, you know, humble B movies. And they've since become, you know, very sophisticated, intelligent and intellectual kind of, you know, considerations of what's out there, you know, and are we alone? The very first one, I suppose, was called The Flying Saucer. Imagine
it was actually called The Flying Saucer.
It was called The Flying Saucer. It does what it says on the UFO. But basically, this is released in 1950, just 3 years after the UFO expression was coined. And it was directed by a guy called Michael Conrad, who the year before, Dave, had directed Bud Abbott and Lou Costello Meet the Killer Boris Karloff.
Right.
So he had obviously a great kind of CV behind him, you know. So he also starred in the movie alongside Pat Garrison and the immortal Hans von Toofen, who I'd never heard of and haven't heard of since. So we had this lurid poster of men and women carrying on the ground as a fireball of a flying saucer zooms overhead. And the tag was, both the CIA and the KGB investigate UFOs in Alaska, friend or foe. Who knows, it could have been Donald Trump. But the plot was American intelligence officials learned that, you know, the Soviets are messing around in the Alaskan wilderness. So they go and investigate these reports of flying saucers. And the whole thing turns into a kind of a bit of a Cold War propaganda yarn. I must say, I watched some clips of this on YouTube and it doesn't look half bad. Really? I mean, considering it was made for a bag of hula hoops and a curly whirly, well, it doesn't look bad at all.
I have never seen it, but I'm going to give you 25 seconds of it. Here goes. The Flying Saucer from 1950.
Of course, most of these reports are obvious nonsense. Brother, you said it. A lot of highly imaginative people, some neurotic, some just plain liars, all swore they saw the flying saucer. Well, we tracked down every report, cross-examined every witness, and found out it was all a bunk. Not all of it, Mike. Some experts, commercial and Air Force pilots, also claimed to have seen it. You're not trying to tell me you really believe there's a flying saucer.
Nobody talked like we tracked down every report.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. It's a load of bunk.
All right. That's the Flying Saucer in 1950. Where are you going now? I mean, obviously, you know, like there's a lot more through the 50s.
There's a hell of a lot more through the 50s. I mean, one of my favourite movies of the 1950s is The War of the Worlds, the 1953 right. version by Byron Haskin, which is directed by Byron Haskin and produced by the great George Pal. Now, of course, in 1938, Orson Welles, the great mischief maker, had done that mock news broadcast of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, as an actual news documentary reporting live from New York, that Martians are actually landing. And some people believe this. Now, this was exaggerated by the newspapers at the time because newspapers were trying to discredit radio as a source for news, would you believe? So they didn't want people to believe it. So there has been no less than 7 films of H.G. Wells' science fiction classic, War of the Worlds. And the best one for me is this 1953 version by Byron Haskin. Now, this won an Academy Award for Best Special Effects. And if you look at it online and look on YouTube, it is very impressive from 1953. It's kind of directed in this very lurid technicolor. And the sound effects are also really interesting as well. They're very sinister. The aliens are not nice people. And there's a variation on kind of H.G. Wells' tripod idea of the Martian spacecraft. These kind of spacecrafts look like very evil coat hangers with kind of periscope debt rays where the hook usually is. And the sound effects, as I say, are, you know, very, very effective. And the scenes of destruction, quite disturbing as well. So this has since been entered into the National Film Registry in the Library of Congress, being deemed a culturally, historically or aesthetically significant piece of work. So in 2005, Steven Spielberg, a great science fiction director who made one of the great UFO movies of all time, Close Encounters, he made a version, of course, and this had a post, you know, 9/11 paranoia about it. Tom Cruise was very good in it as well. BBC a couple of years ago did an adaptation of War of the Worlds as well, which was very faithful to the original book in that it was set in Victorian England, but it was not great.
I'll give you the one you like then. 1953, A Minute of the War of the Worlds.
Where do you think they come from?
How would I know?
Someplace. Mars is near the Earth right now. Happens every 18, 20 years, they say. From Mars.
Maybe these are not men, not like us.
Everything human doesn't have to look like you and me.
If it's men from Mars, we ought to let them know we're friendly.
Don't fool around with something when you don't know what it is.
We'd be the first to make contact with them. See?
We'd be in all the papers.
How about that?
We could show them we're friendly, huh? Walk out there with a white flag. Hey, I got an old sugar sack in my car.
What are we going to say to them?
Welcome to California.
Welcome to California. I vaguely remember something about the kind of a feeling of dread all the way through that movie, which kind of helped an awful lot. Yeah. So, okay, that's from 1953, The War of the Worlds, and we're looking at UFOs and all the rest of it because of the Nope movie that's out at the moment. So give us another one.
Well, I mean, before that, again, there was a far more benign version of the UFO movie in the shape of The Day the Earth Stood Still. Mm-hmm. This is a fantastic 1950 movie directed by Robert Wise, who edited Citizen Kane and the Magnus and Ambersons from the aforementioned Orson Welles. And Wise also went on to make such cracking films as the film Noir Odds on Tomorrow, and also classics like West Side Story and The Sound of Music. But this is an early example of his directorial prowess. Great score as well. Bernard Herrmann did the score. It stars Patricia Neal. So this is a quality movie from word go. And as I say, the aliens in this are far more benign, and they're on the peace mission to Earth, warning Earth about nuclear proliferation. So again, this is at the start of the arms race in 1950. This visitor comes down to Earth and says they're being watched by kind of intergalactic forces, and if they don't kind of buck up their attitude to peace, they'll be destroyed. This is all represented by this massive robot.
Your problem is not technology. The problem is you lack the will to change.
Then help us change.
I cannot change your nature. You treat the world as you treat each other.
But every civilization reaches a crisis point eventually.
Most of them don't make it.
Yours did. How?
Our sun was dying. We had to evolve in order to survive.
So it was only when your world was threatened with destruction that you became what you are now?
Yes.
Well, that's where we are. You say we're on the brink of destruction, and you're right. But it's only on the brink that people find the will to change. Only at the precipice do we evolve. This is our moment. Don't take it from us. We are close to an answer.
That really sounds like John Cleese.
It's so uncanny, isn't it?
Sounds like a Monty
Python. War of the Worlds. Yeah, don't mention the War of the Worlds.
The Day the Earth Stood Still. God, amazing. Okay.
Do you remember the scene in The Life of Brian with the UFO?
Yes, I do remember the scene. You know, the people talk to you in The Life of Brian, I didn't freaking like that. I'm one of the very few. Anyway, moving swiftly on. What have you got next?
Well, the Day the Earth Stood Still, just to finish, is worth really, really talking about, because it's a very early UFO movie.
Yeah,
and it does offer a more benign kind of, peaceful idea of alien visitors, as opposed to the shock horror B movie.
But not exactly E.T. either.
No, well, not quite E.T. either, no. I mean, the nature of the UFO movie, of course, is evolved, way beyond that kind of rickety idea of the Plan 9 from outer space special effects, and has become a very sophisticated thing. And I think a very good example of that recently was Denis Villeneuve's fantastic movie Arrival from about 2016, I think it was. Very, very
Amy
moving,
Adams.
Very moving movie starring Amy Adams as a linguist who was drafted in by the US military. Who else? It's always a civilian who's drafted in to do these things, to start start communicating with these aliens who arrive, this alien spacecraft who arrive all over the globe in these kind of very strange ellipsoid kind of spacecraft suspended just above the ground, looking again very like a prog rock album cover from 1974. And like Christopher Nolan's, far less good Interstellar around the same time, Amy Adams' character, Dr. Louise Banks, has a tragedy in her own life. She lost a child who died of cancer. So she's beset by kind of memories and, of this miserable time in her life, and kind of working on the alien language unlocks a lot of those kind of bad memories for her. It's a very moving movie, and I think that Denis Villeneuve has that quality. He knows how to do spectacle. Mm. He knows how to make you think, but he also knows how to make you weep, really. He's got those things going on. He's a very beautiful director. He's yet to make a bad movie. And I think Arrival is one of his best movies. I think this is a good example of the UFO movie as a thought-provoking thing that, maybe we can work together, that we're not under threat all the time from these alien life
forces. Okay, well, here it is then. Here's Arrival from 5 or 6 years ago.
Everything you're doing there, I have to explain to a room full of men whose first and last question is, how can this be used against us?
Kangaroo.
What is that?
In 1770, Captain James Cook's ship ran aground off the coast of Australia, and he led a party into the country, and they met the Aboriginal people. One of the sailors pointed at the animals that hop around and put their babies in their pouch, and he asked what they were, and the Aborigines said, kangaroo. It wasn't until later that they learned that kangaroo means, I don't understand.
I can sell that for now.
Fair.
And remember what happened to the Aborigines. A more advanced race nearly wiped them out.
It's a good story.
Thanks. It's not true. But it proves my point.
Okay, we're looking at kind of space invaders to Earth. We're looking at Mars attacks. We're looking at kind of all that, UFOs and all these things, etc. And that's why Alan is here from Entertainment. It's from the RT Entertainment, yeah. So, Close Encounters. You mentioned it, vaguely mentioned it earlier on, Alan. I presume that's a big one for you.
Well, this to me will always be the mothership and the motherlode of all UFO movies. Came out in 1977 at a time where, you know, the whole appeal of UFOs was still out there, had not lost any of its kind of public fascination. In fact, President Jimmy Carter, who was elected the year before, 1976, claimed to have seen a UFO, probably above his peanut farm out in, where was he from again? Kentucky? No, Tennessee. Where was he from again? I can't remember. But in any case, the tagline for this was, watch the skies.
Georgia?
No. Georgia, was it Georgia? I think you're right. Watch the Skies was the tagline for this, and this really kind of captured people's imaginations. And the movie opens spectacularly with a French scientist, Lacombe, played by the great Francois Truffaut, who was a massive influence on Spielberg, the director, of course. And he arrives in the Mexican desert to find, you know, a ship, an actual frigate in the middle of the desert. And, you know, these, you know, similar occurrences start happening all over the world. And these scientists very secretly, you know, start piecing together the idea that, you know, maybe the UFOs are returning stuff from the Bermuda Triangle and missing airmen and all these reports over the years. And in fact, the script for this was based on, you know, actual scientific investigations into UFO appearances. It's a great movie. Richard Dreyfuss is fantastic in it. He plays an electric repairman who's buzzed by UFO while out in the night repair one night, and he gets obsessed with the whole idea that there is aliens out there, you know. I found this movie, you know, like a Villeneuve movie, very, very moving. And just a great looking movie as well. I mean, when you look at it now, I think that, you know, Spielberg, the king of, you know, lens flare, he probably overdoes it. The UFOs look like giant Christmas trees. But, you know, the ending where they meet the UFOs at the top of Devil's Tower in Wyoming as a landing dock is terrific stuff. I've seen this so many times in a cinema. I remember seeing it first when I was a kid when it came out, and going to the special edition a few years later. I remember particularly well because I got sick on the bus on the way home. But I think it's one of Richard Dreyfuss's best movies, and it's a real Spielberg classic, visually stunning and also very thought-provoking.
Okay, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Indianapolis Area 31 has traffic 2 o'clock, slightly above.
Can you say aircraft type?
Negative, center. No distinct outline. Say the truth, the target is rather brilliant. Wait a second. He's heading right for my windshield. The traffic is approaching head-on. Alter right and really moving. And right by us, right now. That was really close.
31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, center.
Remember people trying to recreate that on the top of a glass, thinking, no, it doesn't, no, that's not
right.
Anyway, okay, that's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Give us a couple more.
Well, Mars Attacks. Now, Mars Attacks was very interesting because it came out the same year, 1996, as Roland Emmerich's fantastically over-the-top movie, Independence Day. Now, this Mars Attacks was Tim Burton's very trippy homage to the movies of the 50s that we mentioned earlier on. It's great fun. It sees hordes of bug-eyed little green men mercilessly murdering people, promising not to do it again, and then doing it again. It's got Michael J. Fox in the cast, and he's incinerated in his first couple of scenes. It's also got Sarah Jessica Parker. Apparently she winds up with her head stitched with the body of a dog. It's also got Jack Nicholson, who is seeing playing both a casino operator and the President of the United States of America, which makes increasing sense. Tom Jones is also in it as well. I thought this was great crack and a great kind of antidote to Independence Day, which was enjoyably mad, I thought, by Roland Emmerich. I like to call Independence Day the biggest budget B movie of all time. So those two movies came out.
Okay, I'll give you a bit of Mars Attacks first of all. A movie I didn't like at all, sorry.
Sir, Mr. President, I know this seems terrible, but let's not be too rash.
We should nuke them now, sir.
We must establish a line of communication first.
Why not set up a town hall
We can get the public's opinion.
What do you think, Marcia?
Kick the crap out of them.
Ladies and gentlemen, this could be a cultural misunderstanding.
Yeah, maybe to them doves mean war.
We all saw how they reacted to that dove. It frightened them.
He did say that we come in peace.
That could only be Jack Nicholson, and the first one could only be Pierce Brosnan. So, Mars Attacks it is. So Independence Day is the final one. Tell me about that.
Well, a B-movie, a great B-movie. Biggest budget B-movie of all time, I think. I remember there was a huge amount of hype about this. And there was also something in the newspapers about the Murdoch press suppressing an item of information about a piece of alien space dust or something being found in a meteorite that had landed in Antarctica, and they suppressed the movie, suppressed the information rather, in the piece of news until the day of the release of Independence Day itself, because it was a 20th Century Fox movie, just to hype it all up. Now, the Independence Day is completely ridiculous and ridiculously entertaining stuff. It's, you know, from gung-ho director Roland Emmerich. He's a man who makes Michael Bay look like Terrence Malick. This is an alien invasion on a grand scale. You know, forget about flying saucers. These spacecraft are huge, like they're as big as sports stadiums, if not bigger. The scenes of destruction are incredible. This is essentially a science fiction movie meets a disaster movie. It's very memorable for Will Smith's scene where he smacks an alien in the face and quips, "Welcome to Earth." So please, no mention of Chris Rock here, Dave. Please.
No. Yeah. Okay, Independence Day.
I know, Ma. Just try and stay calm.
Tell her to pack up and leave town.
Why? What happened?
Just do it!
Ma, listen. Get your stuff together and head for NSS. Don't argue with me, just go! David, why did I just send my mother to Atlanta? David, talk to me.
You hear me tell you that the signal hidden in the satellite feed is slowly recycling down to extinction?
Not really.
Countdown.
A countdown? Wait, a countdown to what, David?
It's like a chess. First, you strategically position your pieces. Then, when the timing's right, you strike. See? They're positioning themselves all over the world, using this one signal to synchronize their efforts. In approximately 6 hours, the signal's going to disappear and the countdown's going to be over.
And then what?
Checkmate.
And then what? Indeed. Okay, so tell me just finally, Nope then. Is it worth going? It's in the cinemas now, isn't it?
It opened yesterday. I enjoyed it a lot. Initially, when I came out of the cinema, I was disappointed. It's not as good as Get Out, which is a great movie about...
I thought Us was pretty stupid. But
did
there you?
Yeah, I think there's a huge kind of like... what's the word I'm looking for? Some of his movies, that you really do have to suspend your kind of sense of kind of disbelief, but he carries it off with such audacity. He gets away with it. Also, wasn't too blown away by his second movie. This is good. This is a different kind of UFO movie. He uses it, you know, as a jumping off point to explore lots of different things about kind of the history of kind of black people in America. There's also a critique of our love for spectacle, also a critique of the cliched storytelling about kind of the American West. So as usual, Jordan Peele has a hell of a lot going on. And I think the central performances by Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer are excellent. They're really good.
I know the movie that I was thinking of there that I didn't really make head or tail of, but I thought it was great. And one by Vanilla Sky, the one with Tom Cruise. Do you remember that one?
I liked it, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it for the Bob Dylan reference.
I hadn't got a clue what was going on. Okay, I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a bit of this. Nope, it is.
What if I told you that today you'll leave here different?
Pops!
I'm talking to you.
Bro, what'd you see?
Someone above the clouds.
That's big.
How big?
Big.
You think whatever killed Pops is out there?
Someone above the clouds. And the final word to you, as in Alan Corr of RTÉ Entertainment?
Well, we're talking about UFO movies, and I think it's worth mentioning, you know, Arthur C. Clarke's famous line. He said there are two possibilities, that we are alone in the universe or we aren't, and both are equally terrifying.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.